up, everyone? Welcome into CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm your host, Sarah Rudolph, and you're listening to our CUSA Football Championship Preview Show, talking all things Liberty and New Mexico State heading into the title matchup this weekend. I am super excited to have a few folks joining me for the show today. First up, we've got Jordan Stepp, our Assistant Commissioner of Communications, covering all things CUSA football. Jordan, how's it going?
It's going great. Happy to be here and looking forward to a great week.
Me too, which leads us into our next two guests. The next two gentlemen we have joining us on the program may sound familiar to a lot of you. Joining us on CUSA Insider today, we have Alan York, the voice of the Liberty Flames, and Adam Young, TV play-by-play man for the New Mexico State Aggies. It's championship week, everyone. How excited are you guys?
Excited. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Obviously, it's been a magical year for New Mexico State, so happy to be in it in year one.
Yeah, we are very, very excited to have two first-year Conference USA programs in the championship. One thing we've talked about, it's the same matchup as the Women's Soccer Championship that we had a few weeks ago. So we have been chatting about in the office, you guys are familiar opponents, even though this is your first year in the league. So tell me a little bit about, you know, the history between the Flames and the Aggies and how excited it is to be playing for a conference championship.
Adam, you can start.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting because going back to, I guess, 2018, New Mexico State and Liberty were playing a couple times a year. So for New Mexico State, it's the big rivals, right? UTEP and UNM. But for a couple of years there, we were playing Liberty twice in a football season, which was unheard of. So I think a lot of Aggie fans are very familiar with this Flames program, more so than other programs. And there's a lot of respect with what Liberty did a year ago, with what they've done this year. And I know Jerry Kill, the head coach, is just thrilled about getting a second chance to play at Liberty. They were not playing the kind of football back early in the year when they played Liberty the first time than what they're playing right now. So they feel like they're better equipped this time around going to Lynchburg, and we'll see what happens Friday night.
Yeah, I'll add that to what Adam said. You know, going into last year, the country didn't really pay much attention to Liberty and New Mexico State playing each other. Go back to last year's game in Lynchburg, a lot of news breaking with head coaching situation at Liberty, and then Diego Pavia, New Mexico State's quarterback, just absolutely went off in that 49-14 win over Liberty. So since then, it's been Liberty, New Mexico State, at least from our fan base, that really pays attention to what the Aggies are doing. And then after the game back in September, you still kind of took a peek at, okay, let's see what the Aggies are doing. And then you never lost the last couple of weeks. So to have it now again, round two, I know our fan base is excited for Friday night.
One question I have, obviously both teams in the national spotlight, especially over the course of the last couple of weeks. You've got New Mexico State with that big win over Auburn on the road, national team of the week honors from Cheez-It and the FWAA, and then getting votes in the polls as well. You've got Liberty, who has been, you know, in the polls now for a couple of weeks running. What's it been like on campuses and traveling with the teams, with that national recognition starting to come through right at the, kind of the peak here as we get into championship week?
Yeah. I mean, we had a home game last week, Jordan. So that was, cool to see the stands, pretty full for a late November home game. That hasn't always been the case around here. So I think the community's bought in. You know, it's been such a struggle for years with football. It's always kind of been a basketball school. And ever since Jerry Kill came here, things have flipped a little bit with football. They got things rolling a year ago, slow start this year, just like last year. And now you win eight straight games. And I think the community's getting there. I don't know if they're fully bought in yet, but this is about to be a 15-game season where if you win your final two, you get 12 wins, and that's a program record. So I mean, they're breaking records left and right. And you go back to 1960, it was an undefeated team. And that's kind of the team that's that still has the record standing that you're trying to break. So a lot of folks are calling this one of the best years in program history. I mean, You know, people around here, if you told them 2 years ago, hey, we're going to win 10 games going into the Conference USA Championship game in 2023, I don't know if a lot of people would have bought in. But Jerry Kill has just done an unbelievable job. And the cool thing about the program is last year and this year, they've gotten off to slow starts, but they just get better as the year goes on. I mean, last year they were 1-5. This year they were 2-3. So they're playing their best football in October, November, and December. And I go back to coaching when it comes to that, because if you have really good coaching, the team improves as the year goes on. And that's been the case each of the last 2 years.
From a Liberty perspective, you know, going into this year, new conference, new coach, potentially a quarterback situation that wasn't resolved until midway through fall camp. And this team, like Adam talked about the Aggies, Liberty's gotten better each week. Okay, you go 7-0, 8-0. No team has won more than 10 games here at Liberty. So then you get to 11-0. And at that point, that's when the attention really started to center around Liberty, at least within this conference, and obviously getting in the polls a couple of weeks ago. So because of the unknowns going into this season, not sure the fans got too upset that they weren't getting attention earlier in the year. And now busting into the CFP top 25 last week, now you start to nationally see a lot of things be centered around Liberty, which is great. But yeah, our fan base is passionate, just like New Mexico State's is. And to be hosting this game on Friday, I know the fans around town are talking about it. Hey, do you have your tickets? Can't wait to tailgate, that type of thing. So it's been a fun team to follow. And I'm sure we'll dive into more specifics about each team and what makes them click. But this team, you don't feel the pressure of them being 12-0. You're around them every day, and it's like they just want to go to practice and be with their buddies. And so there's not much talk about this poll, that poll. And so Jamie Chadwell, a head coach, really has this team grounded and mentally in a good headspace. And it's been that way since fall camp started.
You know, you talk about the historic seasons that both of you guys are having. So Liberty, obviously the most wins in program history at the moment. New Mexico State, first time with a 10-win season since 1960. So is it, you know, what is it? Is it the combination of the players you got on the roster and the coaching? Is the coaching just really that good? What do you guys, you know, attribute this to?
Coaching's at a pretty high level here. I mean, Jerry Kill, I think a lot of folks know who he is. And, you know, I read social media now that the program's gaining more national attention. A lot of folks are saying, oh, that's where Jerry Kill went. You know, he was out of coaching for a couple of years. He had health issues. It's well documented at Minnesota. Mario Mocha, the athletics director, was his AD at Southern Illinois back in the early 2000s. Mario made the hire, and Jerry wanted to be a head coach again. And, you know, it's not just coaching, but coaching is a big part of it. And it's not just the head coach, it's the staff around him. And they brought in really good players. They've coached them up at a high level. And going back to what we talked about earlier, they just get better and better. New Mexico State's a really young team. We had senior day Saturday. They only had 9 seniors get honored. So, you know, they have a lot of these guys coming back. Jerry's done a really good job in the transfer portal. They're doing NIL at a pretty high level. I mean, he's an old school football coach. The motto is hard hat lunch pail, but I think he's also embraced new school as well, where he knows that NIL, the transfer portal, being a player's coach, I mean, that's kind of the name of the game right now. And the players play really hard for him, and they respect him at a very high level. So it's a combination of really good coaching and having a lot of talent as well. And they have depth. That's been the issue here in the past when people say, well, what's the biggest difference going back to 5 or 6 years ago to now? They're 2 or 3 deep at every spot. And that wasn't the case in the past. So he's been able to build a program around depth to where if the number 2 linebacker comes in or the number 2 safety comes in, there isn't a drop off. And that's been cool to see.
And from a Liberty perspective, you know, Jamie Chadwell has been a good fit for Liberty. He's made stops at other places, Charleston Southern, Coastal Carolina, most recent. And first and foremost, you know, Liberty, to educate those watching or listening to this podcast, largest Christian school in the world when you count the online portion of our enrollment. And Jamie is a devout Christian, and he is able to live his life free here. And that is not the case at his previous stops. That being said, though, he's won everywhere he's been, including his D2 stop when he first started coaching at North Greenville. And so his system, his coaching, his staff have been tried and true at wherever he has gone. Now, as Adam said, you got NIL, you got the transfer portal. All coaches are going through those transitions each and every year, almost each and every week, because there's always communications behind the scenes of coaches talking to players, whatnot. And so you kind of have to have a good grasp of your team and where they are. And like many, Liberty had 50% turnover on the roster. And so how are you going to meld that together? You got to believe in your system first and foremost. And, you know, going through spring ball for the first time, Jamie Chadwell has talked about the older players, veterans are the ones I'm worried about, because you had success with a previous staff. Okay, what's this new staff going to do? How can they make me better when we've already been to four straight bowls? You got to have buy-in from those veterans. The new players, they didn't know any different. And so they bought into what was happening. And it took some time for this team to trust this coaching staff. And that goes back to just human connections and relationships. You got to trust who you're dealing with. And that took some time. And even through this season, it was still, okay, how good are we going to be? Even though, you know, we're undefeated at 5-0, 6-0. So it took probably midway through this season for this team to have full buy-in of, okay, this is what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to be successful. And so that's been some of the keys to Jamie Chadwell, Liberty head coach, and getting the most out of his team so far here in 2023.
And as we look at it stylistically, one of the things that's really stood out to me from a statistical standpoint this year, just across Conference USA, we've got three of the top 12 rushing attacks in the country. This is kind of an era where it's a lot of spread, you know, a lot of passing attack and things like that across the country. So it's interesting to see the stylistic difference, so to speak, with these two teams. And I think, you know, Liberty obviously comes in leading the country in rushing, a tick under 300 yards per game. New Mexico State is 12th in the country right now at 205 a game, roughly. You know, that brings a lot of balance. I'd love to hear kind of your take on the offense from each of your, you know, respective schools, and just kind of go through what that balance has done to lead to the success you've had on the field. And, you know, obviously with the two head coaches, that's something that I think really kind of fits their brands respectively as well.
Yeah, I think when you look at both teams have a quarterback that can run the football. So that's a game changer. Diego Pavia is the quarterback for New Mexico State. He's the team's leading rusher. So if you have a quarterback who is okay with running the football, can run for 100 plus consistently, that'll boost your running numbers. And from the Aggie perspective, right now it's really four or five different running backs. They keep the guys fresh. Kylan Young, who's a freshman, was the featured back down the stretch in the win against Auburn in the fourth quarter 2 weeks ago. And everyone's like, who's this guy? But he could be one of the best running backs on the team. He just hasn't been used a lot because of who's in front of him. Monte Watkins is averaging 11 yards a carry. He was out with an injury against Auburn 2 weeks ago, and they looked just fine running the football. So depth at running back has been a big key. And of course, offensive line play has kind of taken off. The offensive line struggled early on last year, was better down the stretch, and it's been one of the best bright spots this year for New Mexico State. And Jerry Kill wants to run the football. They'll throw it. Diego Pavia has improved drastically with his accuracy this year, but first and foremost, they want to ground and pound. They want to use clock. The big storyline last week was New Mexico State was the third slowest offense in the country going into the game, and Jacksonville State was the second fastest offense. So that was cool to watch those contrasting styles. They'll play with tempo at times, but Jerry always says, let's just get the game to the fourth quarter with a chance to win it. So they're going to try to chew up some clock, run the football, and then see what happens in the fourth.
I agree with Adam. I don't think these are contrasting styles. I think both these teams mirror each other from offensive philosophy. Jamie Chadwell wants to run the football first and foremost. And it's a great question, Jordan, that you get to with these offenses. And I'll go back to fall camp. And I've told people even to this day, okay, Caden Salter has been great. The running game has been great. But that doesn't matter what kind of athletes you have unless you have an offensive line that can open up holes and push the D-line back. Going to fall camp, 4 days in, tragically, Liberty loses a true freshman offensive lineman who I'm not sure if Taj Boyd, where he would have cracked the depth chart, but he was a three-star player from Virginia Beach. So the Flames tragically lose him. A day, maybe 2 days later, they lose their best offensive lineman to a knee injury, Brendan Schlittler, who was going to be a five-year starter this fall. So immediately, they haven't even had a preseason scrimmage yet. And you're thinking, whoa, where is this offensive line going to be week one against Bowling Green? Had no clue. Okay. They've molded into a phenomenal unit. And they've been outstanding. Knock on wood, they've had the same starting five all 12 games. And there might be 10, 11 teams that can say that this year. So it starts right there with this offensive line. Liberty depth at running back has been phenomenal as well. Enter the transfer portal. Quentin Cooley from Wake Forest, Bailey Lucas from Duquesne. We've had a couple of guys that have been nicked and bruised and missed a couple of games. So you've had to reinvent your offense a little bit, bringing a slot receiver in Aaron Bedgood, who was selling insurance this past summer, wasn't even on a roster anywhere after he got dinged up and knee injuries at Coastal Carolina. So he had to be brought into the fold during the summer. So it's really remarkable where these offenses are entering this game here today, not knowing what we were going to see or even be like with both of these teams back in preseason camp.
I do have a quick follow-up, especially shifting to the other side of the ball. I think you get a good look at this matchup and obviously saw it on September 9th to a degree, though. Again, I would agree with both of you that both teams are certainly playing a different level right now than they were early on in the campaign. But looking at strength on strength, essentially, run defense is obviously a huge part. I think physicality plays a big part in the identities of both of these football teams. And both are able to stop the run at a pretty efficient clip. With that being a success on the offensive side of the ball, how do you see your team's defense kind of stacking up against that multifaceted attack, but especially what they can do in the run game?
Well, you look at New Mexico State, and statistically, back when they played Liberty, that was part of that first three-game stretch to the year. They were giving up 32 points per game. Since then, they've only allowed 16 a game. So the defense, totally different now, but they know how high-powered this Liberty offense can be. It's interesting because you go back to the Auburn game. They held Auburn to 65 yards rushing, which Auburn was ninth in the country in rushing yards per game going in. Last week, Jacksonville State was coming off a game where they rushed for over 500, a Conference USA record, and they struggled to run the football. So they were throwing the football more often than not last week. So stopping the run has been very effective recently, but Caden Salter can do multiple things, and he just brings a totally different dimension at quarterback. And one of the issues that New Mexico State has struggled with, you go back to the Middle Tennessee game when Nick Battiato got loose for 100-plus running the football at the quarterback spot. So they have to contain the quarterback running the football. It's still a very young defense, but the defensive line is very good. It's deep. The linebacker group has improved as the season goes on. And for the most part, the secondary has limited explosive play. So and I would say right now the defense is the strength of this football team. And the defense has probably won three of the previous four games for the football team. I mean, the offense has been a little more inconsistent recently, and the defense has won some football games for them, especially last week. So I think that's encouraging going in when you know how good your offense can be, but your defense is playing at such a high level.
From a Liberty perspective, it's funny, most of the noteworthy news coming out of Liberty, at least nationally or even in this league, has been about the offense, rushing the football, leading the country. week one against Bowling Green, it was the defense that had a season high 5 takeaways against the Falcons. That really spearheaded the defense, which, you know, leads the country in interceptions right now and among the best in takeaways. And so it was that defense that helped get the offense going on the right track back in week one. And I would say outside of Old Dominion and UMass, which was before UTEP, the defense, at least the second half of the season, gangbusters first half. Second half, though, Liberty's had some big leads. You play some different rotations with younger guys. And so defensively, they haven't played their best game the last 2 or 3 weeks. Now, last week, the hold UTEP, which loves to run the football to 50 yards, a season low for the Flames rush defense. So they're coming into this game against New Mexico State feeling good about that defense that's been a little bit thin on the D-line. Kenny Charles, one of their best D-linemen coming into the season, was banged up early in fall camp and really didn't get going until week four at FIU. He gets hurt a couple of weeks ago, and he's done for the year. And so it does test that depth defensively on that D-line, and they've got a good rotation going now with guys that have gotten some experience because Kendi wasn't able to play earlier. And it's a unit that's led by its secondary. And so if the Flames can contain Diego Pavia, keep him in the pocket and neutralize him, maybe force New Mexico State to throw it a little bit. The strength of this Flames defense definitely is on the back end, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard when you have two quarterbacks like Caden Salter and Diego Pavia for people to notice the defensive side of the ball. You mentioned, you know, Liberty, yes, leads the nation in interceptions. They're sixth nationally with takeovers with 24. So, you know, I kind of want to talk a little bit more about the quarterback play, though, because that is obviously a big point going into this game. These two opponents are not strangers. They know each other very well, as we've well documented. But Pavia through the air, 23 passing touchdowns this year, 29 for Salter. What do these two bring to your respective programs?
Well, Diego's probably the heart and soul of the offense. He just does so much. He's tough. He's hard-nosed. He's maybe 5'10". That's what they list him at, and I mean, he's probably a little shorter than that, but he's just tough. He's a tough quarterback. He won't slide. He'll try to run through a linebacker. I mean, he's unconventional in so many different ways, and his accuracy, as I mentioned earlier, has really, really improved this year. Last year, he struggled throwing the football at times. Still ran it well, but struggled throwing the football. And then you go back to last week, and he only had 6 interceptions all year before last week. And he throws a couple of picks against a good Jacksonville State defense. So I think a lot of Aggie fans are wondering, too, how will Diego bounce back from a game that wasn't his best game of the season? He struggled at times last week with turnovers. And despite committing 4, they still found a way to win the football game. But, you know, Diego's the heart and soul. I mean, he's the engine that makes the offense run. And he has a lot of really good weapons around him. That has certainly helped and elevated his play, but the offense goes as Diego goes. And, you know, he played well at Liberty last year, of course. I think he had 6 total touchdowns. Didn't play great in the matchup earlier this year, but he always plays with confidence. He has kind of a swagger to him, and I'm sure he'll be confident despite the 2 interceptions last week going into Friday.
And for Liberty's quarterback, Caden Salter, he's a player that I told y'all earlier in the podcast, there was quarterback questions. Who is it going to be in fall camp? I'm not lying. That's exactly what the case was. Do you have Jonathan Bennett, who led Liberty to wins at Arkansas last year at home against BYU, the veteran of this group? Does he get the nod? And you have Caden Salter, who showed flashes of brilliance last year, got hurt, missed 5 games. So we really didn't see how good he can be. Well, going to week one, it's Caden Salter gets the start. And then we start hearing stories of what they did during fall camp. There's no denying Caden Salter, phenomenal talent on the field, great arm. He can run it. We all know that. We know the stats, et cetera. The coaches needed him to be a better leader off the field, a better student of the game, studying the game. And he has done that. And so he has taken what God-given talents he has and made himself a better quarterback with his preparation off of the field. And not one of the more verbose guys on our team. Do quarterbacks need to be? That's up for debate for everybody else to think about. But he's a quiet leader, lets his game kind of speak for himself. But when he gets in the end zone, does enjoy, you know, dancing with his teammates and things like that. So I would say, you know, for him, just maturing a little bit. And he was our pregame profile. We have a segment on our pregame radio show each week where we talk to a different player, kind of full length, 6-7 minute interview. And he was our guest this past week against UTEP. And he talked about how much maturing he has done as a person. He used to enjoy himself, you know, just like college kids do today. But now he's kind of a homebody, likes to go home after practice, play video games, and just be with his friends. And so he has matured off of the field. And that's one of the biggest things this coaching staff needed to see from him entering this season.
I've had the opportunity to talk to both of those gentlemen. I met Diego at Media Day, and Caden was actually one of our very first guests on the podcast, so we got to talk at length with him. So from a conference perspective and a personal perspective, I just hope everyone wins.
I do have a couple more questions. I guess my biggest, and this will be kind of a two-parter, we touched on Diego, we've touched on Caden, Alan, you mentioned Quentin as well. I'm just wondering, in your minds, who would be a key separate from kind of the obvious player, kind of a focal point that might turn the tide in this game, whether that be on, I guess I'm looking for somebody on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, or if you want to get into special teams. I know obviously Ethan Albertson, you know, kicked a game winner the other day for New Mexico State, and you know, Liberty certainly has had a lot of success in the return game and things of that nature. So curious if you have any standouts that are kind of maybe under the radar for a more national audience.
Yeah, I think for the Aggie side of things offensively, probably Eli Stowers. He started to get more attention around Conference USA the last 6 or 7 weeks. He entered this season as the backup quarterback. He was a transfer from Texas A&M. His dad is an Aggie legend, was a really good cornerback for the program in the early 90s. And Eli comes in as this heralded four-star, and there was competition at quarterback in fall camp, but Diego gets the job, and Eli's just kind of hanging out in the sideline for the most part. And after the first handful of games, they said, we need to find a way to play Eli. So Eli turns into a wide receiver / tight end. And after his first four games playing those two positions, he was the second on the team in catches. And Eli's above 30 in catches now. He still occasionally plays quarterback in certain packages. And he is the ultimate Swiss Army knife. He does a lot of things, and he needs to know a lot of different positions on the field. Jerry Kill has called him one of the smartest football players he's ever coached, and he has to be smart because he's playing three different positions right now. So I think he's a key player. I mean, he had a rushing touchdown and a receiving touchdown against Auburn. He had a receiving touchdown and a rushing touchdown against WKU.
Wow.
You're just going to see number 7 all over the field in a bunch of different roles. So offensively, I would say Eli Stowers. And then on defense, you know, probably two guys, Keyshawn Elliott at linebacker, team leader in tackles. He's active. He's only a sophomore. He's all over the field. And then Miles Rouser at safety. Rouser is a former high school four-star, really good player, had his first interception as an Aggie a week ago. And he's all over the field. So I think if Rouser and Elliott can make plays on defense, that'll certainly help the Aggies' case to win the football game.
Yeah, from Liberty perspective, you know, the last 2 weeks, Liberty's been pretty balanced 50-50 when you look at total yardage, pass versus rushing the football, you know, 250, 250, what have you on average. 2 weeks ago, it was 50-50. And typically you'll see our wide receivers, CJ Daniels, Trayon Sibley, you know, 2, 3, 4 catches apiece, maybe 6 or 7 one particular game. Against UMass, the tight ends led the group. Austin Henderson, our backup tight end, who had to play a lot because Bentley Hanshaw dinged up his shoulder against Old Dominion. He couldn't play against UMass. And so the box score was a little bit different against UMass. Certainly was the case against UTEP because Liberty ran it for 411 yards, passed for under 30. And so I would say getting CJ Daniels in some routes that he can flourish in the open field, and just our wide receiver group in general, what will it be, you know, second round against Mexico State? And so you've seen some unusual box scores from a receiving standpoint last 2 weeks. How does Liberty combat that against New Mexico State? And then defensively, our linebackers have been our leading tacklers all year long. We mentioned Trayon Sibley, fifth-year senior who is our leading tackler. He's sideline to sideline, as cliche as it is. He really is. And another one of his cohorts out there, Joseph Carter, sophomore linebacker, was added on scholarship during fall camp. We all have seen videos of players getting scholarships during certain points of the year. And I actually saw one, the Washington Husky kicker, got on scholarship there, helping them win the Apple Cup last week. So Joseph Carter is a guy that you'll see run around the field a lot for a younger player, has really gotten a lot of experience and is dynamite when the ball is around his space. Really, really a good open field tackler.
Yeah, and you mentioned Tyron Dupree. I mean, I think looking at what I mentioned earlier about the rushing and statistically speaking, something that's always stood out to me the past, you know, 6-7 weeks. Also, individual tackling in this conference has been fantastic, especially from the linebacker position. Tyron Dupree, obviously one of those guys. He's in the top 25 nationally in tackles with, you know, 9 per game. And then obviously you've got a couple from some of the other schools and programs in the league in Conference USA, a few in the top 10. But yeah, Dupree's been somebody that's really stood out. And, you know, Adam, you mentioned Elliott just all over the field. So I appreciate that. And I think, you know, your insight on that's very, very helpful. So thank you.
So guys, my final question, Jordan may have more. My final question is, if you had to pick a couple of bullet points as your keys to the game for the Aggies and respectively the Flames to win out and win the conference championship, what would be your keys to the game? Adam, we'll start with you.
Well, we host a weekly coaches show, and I typically finish off my interviews with Jerry Kill with the same question. And pretty much every single week, it's the same keys. Don't turn the ball over, win the turnover battle, which they did not do a week ago. I still don't know how they can win a football game with 4 turnovers. So they can't do that this weekend. They will not win against Liberty with 4 turnovers. So win the turnover battle. They're 6-0 when they don't turn the football over. That's, you know, a good mark and a good stature for where they need to be. And then special teams, obviously Ethan Albertson had the game winning field goal a week ago. They have a really good punter in Zach Haynes that they use effectively. I mean, they have a lot of trust in Zach. So winning special teams, and I think Diego has to play really well. He cannot have just an average game for them to win. Diego has to be high level Diego, you know, the Diego that was at Liberty, you know, last year, the Diego that played a couple weeks ago against Auburn. They need him to be at a really high level to have a chance.
I think for both teams, don't let the magnitude of the event bog you down emotionally. Teams come into these championships with so much energy, and sometimes that can fail them early on. Now you can't, you know, win it or lose it maybe at the end of the game, but it's how you start might kind of get you that momentum as you move forward. So both teams are going to be way excited to play this game. And for those of us at Liberty, you know, we enjoy watching Diego Pavia play because he's got a swagger about him that is good for college football. But you can't let those emotions get the better of you as this game starts out, because one or two plays early on could affect how you play later on in the game. Maybe if extra points missed and you're chasing points later. So the beginning part of the game has been vital. And for Liberty, they have lost the coin flip 10 times of 12 games.
Really?
It's almost a joke now that when they flip it, it's like, okay. But Liberty's also scored I think it's 10, maybe 10 of or 9 of their 12 opening possessions. So despite that, it hasn't really bothered them. And my major key is Liberty, from a time of possession, number 2 in the country, leads Conference USA. Let your offense help your defense. If your offense can stay out there and move the ball methodically, score points when you get in the red zone, it's going to help your defense stay fresh against a dynamic quarterback that Diego Pavia is, and a team that's playing really good despite having to come here to the East Coast, losing 2 hours, you know, because of the travel. It's still going to be a fun game on Friday night. But those are just some of the things I'm going to look at as we crank up our broadcast at 5:30 Eastern.
And you mentioned the emotions behind it. Obviously, for Liberty, you guys have a chance at an undefeated season. And this is the first time we've had a 12-0 team going into the championship game. Jordan, correct me if I'm wrong, since 2011?
Correct.
Oh, I got it. So it's a big deal, obviously. So how do you think the team needs to handle that emotional side of it as well going into the game?
Well, like I said, Sarah, earlier, there are things going on with this team that emotionally they've had the highest of highs going 12-0, the lowest of lows, you know, having to go to a funeral for one of their teammates back in fall camp. So they've seen the gamut, and luckily there's been more highs than lows, but going through that, which nobody likes to go through it, it has bonded this team to lengths that we won't know for years down the road. We really don't. And so while they're in this game right now, they are a tight group. And I could not stress enough, one of the things that doesn't get talked about is how this team, they love being 12-0, but you wouldn't know they are going to practice. It just feels like fall camp. I mean, they're getting better each week. And so for them, Jamie Chadwell just has a remarkable job of getting this team to focus in on today, which is, you know, as we tape this November 27th on a Monday. And so whatever they're doing, be the best at what you're doing today. And then tomorrow, and just stack days. And that's what this team has done. Now, coming into Friday night, the weather is supposed to be a little bit iffy from a precipitation standpoint. We'll see how that ends up. And will that deter the fans? I don't think so. It's the first time Liberty's hosted an FBS championship game. So it's exciting for the fan base to experience that. And they'll be ready to go. Ticket sales have been great from a Liberty perspective. And I'm a big pop and circumstance guy. I've heard maybe, and Adam can correct me, hopefully the New Mexico State band is going to make the trip out here. Am I right on that, or do you know?
I've heard that as well. I
hope so.
I can't confirm 100%, but I did hear that, yes.
It's college football. It should be that way. And we hope there's some Aggie fans in the house. It's just, that's what it's made for. These types of events, regardless if it's Power 5 or Group of 5, it's still a championship game and two high-quality teams that respect each other, and that's going to bring the best out of each other. So from a mental standpoint, I think that's kind of where Liberty's looking at it coming up on Friday.
I can confirm that the Aggie band will be there, as that is an area I cover for the conference.
Awesome. Okay.
The presentation is under me, so I can confirm they will be making the trip with large numbers. So you guys are bringing quite the group.
Only reason I bring that up here is because middle of the season, long story short, we have started a tradition that years ago schools have done about playing your alma mater. Larry Sipe is our band director, and I talked to him last year, and I said, Larry, we got to get alma mater. He's like, Alan, we've got one. And he's just taking over the band. He's been part of Liberty for decades. I was like, well, why don't we play it? He's like, we are. Don't worry. So last year they started doing it, and now Xavier Gadlin, who I know you had on your podcast a couple of weeks ago, salt of the earth, one of the best guys that I've ever been around following college athletics. He is just a tremendous guy on and off the field. He has now been the guy, whatever it's been, you know, we had 7 home games, so he's done it maybe 4 of them. Game over, Liberty wins. He is conducting the alma mater. And so I'm hopefully they're doing it again on Friday night, but I do love the bands and what they bring. I even commented on I'm stealing this podcast away. I'm sorry.
I even tipped
the cap to UTEP on Saturday. We had some fans, you know, out in El Paso, and our mascot and cheerleaders were there, but the UTEP band just killed it. They were so good. And we had mics kind of placed around the stadium. And it just, I don't care. I mean, luckily it was more fight song for Liberty winning, although it wasn't a fight song, but you could hear their band playing between snaps and stuff. And it was just, it adds to the broadcast. And from an audio medium, it's really cool. So bring on the Aggie band. Look forward to hosting them on Friday, and may the best team win.
Yeah, absolutely. It just adds so much to the game when you've got some fans, some pomp and circumstance, like you said, from both sides. So something that's unique, not necessarily unique across the country, but one thing that we do is we host the conference championship game on site at the school who has the best record in the conference. And that is not the case for some people. There's a lot of neutral site games across the country. And I think that's one thing that really makes us unique. And that is just so fun to get to be a part of. And we are very much looking forward to being in Lynchburg on Friday.
I've got one final question, and this is a little off the field. And I'm going to frame it as if I'm asking for traveling New Mexico State fans who may come in, but secretly it's also asking for myself. I like to eat. I don't think that's a secret around our offices here, and I like to find a great place when we travel. Now, Adam, I know you've had the opportunity to travel to Lynchburg, so I'd love your take on this as well. But certainly, Alan, being there, you've probably got a couple must hit spots for a dinner. If you're a traveling Aggie fan or myself, where should they, or where should I go?
Apparently I'm not invited.
Sarah's invited.
I'll actually defer to Alan in this one, since I just do home TV and I don't travel on the radio. I've not been to Lynchburg. Okay. So I've heard great things, but I'm sure our fans would love to know, Alan.
Now petitioning to get Adam to Lynchburg.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I know, Jordan, you're going to be out there a couple of days, which is good. You have more opportunity maybe than most fans do coming in because your duties with the conference. A couple of spots that just come to mind, and I promise you I won't hijack this question like I did the last one with the band. If you love barbecue, County Smoke is okay. Phenomenal. And I can connect you with Ken Hess, who owns County Smoke. If you'd like to, I can send you
Ken
his
and
name
I.
and number.
Ken and I outside have been emailing of that, back and forth.
There's another place. Forest is I call it a suburb of Lynchburg. It's 10 minutes away. Benjamin's Cows and Crabs. Really good. Just local place. You drive by it, you wouldn't think about stopping, but when you do, you're going to go back a second and third time. And then downtown, depending upon where you're staying, Bootleggers is a great hamburger bar. El Jefe is a great local Mexican place downtown. Shoemakers is a high class white tablecloth steakhouse. So just a couple of places there that are downtown in the area that I would recommend.
Jordan is so high class. We'll definitely be finding him at Shoemakers.
Thank you.
Actually, Ken Hess and I have been emailing back and forth because we are going to visit one of his other restaurants. We are going to County Sunrise.
There you go.
Brand new. Very excited to get over there. I won't give too much away as to why we're going there, but we will be there.
Got it. So super Sounds good.
About that. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. We are so looking forward to the matchup this weekend, and hopefully, Alan, we'll get to meet you guys in a couple of days there in Lynchburg. And don't forget, guys, if you like what you're hearing on the podcast, please like, subscribe on Apple or Spotify. Give us a follow over on @CUSA Insider Pod, either on X or Instagram. And as we've mentioned through this entire call, the place to be this Friday, December 1st, is in Lynchburg, Virginia. But if you can't make it in person, make sure you've got your game day set up and snacks ready to go this Friday, December 1st at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central. Aggie fans, get off of work early and be on your couch at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. And change the channel over to CBS Sports Network and get ready for what is bound to be an incredible Conference USA football championship game. Guys, got anything else before we sign off?
Happy to be on. Great platform. Enjoy watching it and listening to it.
Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. That's it for today. We'll see you guys again the same time next week. Thanks for listening to CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. For my guys on the call, Jordan Stepp, Alan York, Adam Young, I'm Sarah Rudolph, and we are signing off.